Hey, this is Stephanie from Color Me In, and I don't have a good segue. I will think of one maybe, eventually. But this week I've been super into a Northeastern band called Empath. I saw them open up for Wand, and they were great. And speaking of Wand, I talked about them for the past two episodes, but they finally released their double LP. It's 16 songs long, I think, 16 or 18, and it's a fucking amazing. If you are a fan of Brian Eno, or there's a song that ends the album that's very Lou Reed like, and if you also like what's that one band, Neil Young, that's the band. If you're into Neil Young, they're super, like, they're wearing their inspirations on their sleeves, and very Velvet Underground moments too. All right, who do I have in front of me today?
You have Jimmy Jackson. That's me.
Jimmy Barbecue.
Jimmy Sweet Barbecue. Sweet Jimmy Barbecue. Yes.
Yes. That's how Dr. Pants introduced you.
Dr. Pants does introduce me that way.
Yes. What do you do? How do you know Dr. Pants?
Well, I was a student at ACM.
What year?
I started the fall of 13. And I graduated the spring of 17, and I now work at ACM.
Yes.
In the Business Development Center, and I work with Scott Booker and his...
Who's Scott Booker?
Scott Booker, he's the head of ACM,
and?
And he manages a band called The Flaming Lips.
If you've heard of him.
If you've ever heard of them. So I work with him on several things. And then I play drums, mm-hmm, in several bands around town, Dr. Pants being one of them, who I met at ACM as he was one of my teachers. Mm. And I also have just started a thing where I'm working with Upstage Promotions and promoting shows.
Cool.
Here in Oklahoma City.
Oh, cool. That's super neat. I didn't know you were doing that.
Yeah.
Didn't you also play with Lunar Lab?
I play with Lunar Laugh. Okay. I play with Grant Adams.
That's Stu's brother, right?
That's Stuart's brother. I play with a church band. I play...
Life Church, right? Do you play with Emily?
I don't play at Life Church, okay, but I have gone to Life Church. And no, it was another church, but... Mm-hmm.
There's many churches.
I play with several people. Whoever really needs a drummer and they want to, like, hire me, I'm all good to play with.
Yeah.
So,
Jimmy, you're a tight drummer, by the way. Do you wear in-ears? Because I didn't see you wear in-ears at the pan show.
I wasn't wearing in-ears.
And you were really tight. Well, I was like, I didn't know Jimmy was so good.
I try. You know, I definitely try to, like, there's a point in my life where I was like, either I'm going to be good with a metronome or I'm not going to do this ever again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be a drummer. And so I had to...
How
become good with the metronome. It was really hard at first because I would get really uncomfortable and, like, insecure about my drumming,
mm-hmm,
playing with a metronome. And then once you do it enough, it turns out you just can do it. And
how long do you think it took for you to, like, lock in?
To really get it locked in, probably a year of just, like, nonstop practicing with it to feel super comfortable with it. But, I mean, that being said, it's like once you do it several times, you know, you start to kind of figure out what works for you. And for a while I would have to count, you know, to the metronome in order for it to really, so I could really focus in on it. And, you know, because just all those little slight speed ups and slow downs that aren't even, you know, really that intense, that just will throw you off. But now once the click starts, you know, because I play it to a click at church every Sunday. And and once it starts, I mean, it's like I can just, you know, almost fall asleep and still play to the click. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's like one of those things.
You heard it here.
Yeah. Not really, but.
That's cool. No, yeah, I have fought with the metronome for, like, my entire life. And it's kind of like, when will this become easy?
It's,
I don't know.
It's a lot of practice, man.
Yeah.
A lot of practice.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. But it is an ally, even though it feels like an enemy.
Yeah.
It is an ally.
Yeah,
it will help
totally.
Immensely.
Do you just want to start?
Yeah,
so
let's
we
do
established
this.
Jimmy's a drummer.
I am a drummer.
And he plays in, I would say, indie bands.
Yeah,
indie?
I play
really
independent.
I don't know.
Indie pop. A lot of, like, Grant, I would consider Grant Adams kind of like a pop singer-songwriter.
Ooh, okay.
And I really like playing with him. Same with Lunar Laugh, you know, kind of a indie pop band.
Yeah.
Power Pop.
Power Pop. Oh. Which,
yeah, I know, right? But, yeah.
I love. All right.
Cool.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I just have to, I have to.
I fucked up. I kind of fucked up because I was like, I thought I told Jimmy what to prepare. And then I texted him at midnight. Yeah. I was like, hey, I don't know if I told you, but. This is what you need to prepare. This is what I'm
doing. So it's a list of 10 works of art.
And he fucked up too, because he's got 9.
I got 9, but kidding. There'll be a 10th, don't worry.
You'll think
so
of
it's
one.
So 10 works of art that have inspired me.
Yeah, and like works of art is very loose.
Is a loose term, and yeah. Then we'll just talk about it.
Yeah, like I've That's had awesome. Santiago came, he brought in comics and video games, and then he had albums, and then I had someone else do... Yeah, mostly music because we all go to music school. But like I said,
well, I love art. I really do. I know, crazy.
I love
am
art.
A great. I have a problem with media. I devour media.
I saw Swamp Thing because of you.
Exactly,
a great movie. Please watch both of them.
It's not a good
it's
movie.
It's great. It's perfect, Jimmy.
But you should watch it. Shout Factory has a Blu-ray of Swamp Thing. And MVD Home Video has a Blu-ray of The Return of Swamp Thing.
I torrented both of them. They're, you can stream them
You
for
can
free.
Stream them for free. But if you're like me and you want to amass collections of physical media.
You and Jackson should have like a movie night.
Oh, man, that'd be fun.
That'd be something.
That would be, it'd be wild for sure. I mean, definitely. But I love movies. I love comics. I love music, obviously. I mean, I'd love to devour media. You mentioned Santiago and comics, and I'll just go ahead and start with comics. And I do have something on my list that is comics, and I can't see again. I didn't have time to really prepare. And so I have two things, but it counts as one. And so I have two favorite comic book characters, and it's Moon Knight and then Swamp Thing, like the movie.
I didn't know Swamp Thing was your favorite comic
yeah
character?
One of them yeah
Ooh.
Yeah I
why
it was really like it started as a horror comic which is really cool, and it's like Swamp Thing's like hanging out with like ghosts and like vampires and like crazy stuff happens, and then yeah like it gets weird fat by like issue like I don't know like by the first 20 issues he's like doing the most insane magical things where he's like, oh, he's in space on Mars.
Something in
and
space.
Like, you're like, what? It's like, when this, how does this happen? You know, there's actually a really cool, this is a sidebar. There's a cool Swamp Thing comic that never came out because it was deemed too racy, where Swamp Thing was a time traveler and he actually saw Jesus die on the cross.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, me too.
How is that too racy?
Because it was like back in like the. Maybe it was back in like the 80s.
I feel like if someone were
mid
like.
Mid 80s. I think if someone did it now, it would be fine. But yeah.
We should find those manuscripts.
They
and like publish
straight
them.
Up. Like DC was like, you can't put that comic out because people are going to lose it. I know, right?
I mean, like if there's one historical event that I would want to witness, it would be that. Or the birth. The birth of Jesus Christ, or the crucifixion.
I mean, it's pretty
or
wild.
Or the resurrection.
Yeah, I mean, it is Easter weekend, man. This dates that. This dates the recording now that I said that. They'll know.
That's okay.
But yeah, so there's a couple. This is why I couldn't choose.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple. There's a Swamp Thing story where it's all about his daughter.
Swamp Thing has a daughter?
Swamp Thing has a daughter who's half human, half plant. It's it's really confusing.
Oh no. Just you were telling me about the plant sex scene and I was like, it can't be that bad.
It
and
was
then
that
I
bad, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah. So he has a daughter and
is it with that girl? Or is it someone?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think so. But
something's getting around.
But he the daughter becomes like in this weird thing where she doesn't know what world she wants to live in, the human world or like the like plant world or whatever.
Yes.
And Swamp Thing is actually like he loses his mind for a little bit and becomes this really crazy, like evil thing that just like murders everything he sees.
Not Swamp Thing.
I know, yeah. And so then his daughter has to like try to like figure out how to be a human and like be in high school, and then also like be like, my dad's going crazy because he's a freaking plant, you know, or whatever.
Does she have, like, visible plantness to her?
She can control the plants, but she looks like a human. But she has the control of plants.
Cool.
And so that's really cool. And then Moon Knight. So that run of comics is really inspiring because I've always loved the like, sort of, another thing we'll get to, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, mm-hmm. is Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
I'll own it. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing. But it is, like, almost like that with Swamp Thing, which I love. This other comic is Moon Knight, which is a Marvel character, and his whole thing is he has dissociative identity disorder. Mm-hmm. So he's multiple personalities, basically. And one of the things that I really love about the different, like, comic stories throughout the years with him is that people have taken that and played with it and done all these different cool things. And the coolest thing, or one of the coolest things they did with it, was there's a whole story of when he, like, moves from New York to L.A. And, like, all the Avengers are, like, in New York because that's where, like, all that stuff happens, right? Yeah. If you've seen the movies or whatever. And he moves to L.A., and then he's so, like, doesn't know how to cope, I guess, with, like, being the only superhero there,
mm-hmm.
that he makes his other personalities other members of the Avengers.
Ooh.
So he convinces himself that he's Captain America, Wolverine.
I spilled water everywhere.
Oh, it's so good. he convinces himself that he's Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man.
Is Wolverine part of the Avengers?
He can be at times.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At times. But he will, like, have, like, in the comic, it shows it in the context as he sees it. So you see, like, Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man all, like, fighting.
Okay.
And then it'll like, you'll turn the page, and it'll cut to how the bad guys see it, or how it, like, actually is happening. And it's just, like, Moon Knight dresses Moon Knight with, like, these big metal claws just murdering people.
Cool.
And it's really crazy. But that was definitely... that's one of my favorite Moon Knight stories, and one of the first that really made me go, oh, this is really important and cool. And those are the type of things that really got me into the comics, and I'm an avid reader, and
yes,
I collect them. And
what age did you get into comics?
21.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. I was definitely older. I was not a child.
So it's like around... Were you in college then?
Yeah, I was in college.
And you were reading comics?
Yeah, yeah.
You had time for that?
Barely.
I feel.
Yeah, no, I for the last about 4 years now, close to five, I've lived around the street from a comic store, and I just never would go in there. Mm-hmm. And then actually Scott Booker's the one who got me into comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, bless.
We were working so out of his Edmond office. Mm-hmm. Edmond's a town right north of Oklahoma City, and we're working out of there, and he has a bunch of comics, and we were looking at them, and I was like, man, I've never read comics. He's like, well, you totally should. You should go read. He said, you should go read Swamp Thing.
And that's, I was like, the first comic,
yeah,
he told
Swamp
you
Thing
to
by
read.
Alan Moore. It's really, really good. And so I went, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to do it. I went in the comic store, and like, well, we don't have that one right now, but we have these others. So I started reading them, and I mean, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I started reading Deadly Class. I don't know if I told you. Have you read that?
No, but actually, my wife loves Deadly Class.
It's really cool.
One of her favorite comics.
My friend Jamie is a comic illustrator, and also most of his items were comics. And I got into comics after The Umbrella Academy on Netflix premiered.
Yeah, really good comics. Too.
Yes. Yeah, the comics prefer a little bit over the movie, but...
Yeah, I haven't seen the series. I haven't seen the show
It's really
yet.
Good.
I love my boy. I love my boy Gerard, you know.
I cried. I love him. But yeah. I was like, I need comics to read now. And he was like, oh, you would like Deadly Class because it's a bunch of punk assassins at school. So.
Have you read any other Gerard Way's comics?
He let me borrow his copy of Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol is really good. My favorite is Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye.
Oh, I don't know about that one.
It's the same. So Gerard Way started this comic imprint under DC called Young Animal. Mm-hmm. It's a Young Animal book. He was the editor of all of the comics under that. And then he also wrote Doom Patrol, and then he co-wrote Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye.
Oh. Okay.
And that's one of my favorite. Cave Carson's another one of my favorite characters that no one knows about and no one cares about. And I'm the only person. I own every appearance. Every single appearance that Cave Carson has ever been in.
Aww.
I own that comic.
You're like the James Murphy of comics.
I mean, man, it's like people are like, why do you want that? I was like, well, because
why not?
On this one panel, they mentioned Cave Carson's name. Mm. You know, it's like one of the, it's like I'm that deep. Or I'm like, oh my gosh, you know.
No, I love that. Were comics kind of just like something to... for you to get your mind off of music? Because I found as a music student, I can't really enjoy music in the same way that I used to before because it requires more brain juice. So I turn to comics and movies now just to kind of give my brain a break.
So I've always been just a giant nerd.
Okay.
I've always been a nerd with everything.
You did go to Tokyo for your
honeymoon. I did go to Tokyo for my honeymoon. It was amazing. But... comics were just an extension of that, where I was like, I'm already into nerdy things. Mm. It was an easy step. Like, basically anything with a good story, I'm into, you
sure,
know?
Yeah.
And so, reading comics for the story was like, oh, this makes sense. And so that's the stuff I'm drawn to as well, is like the interesting story elements and that kind of thing.
The fantastical.
Yeah, totally. And a lot of, like, I love superhero comics, but a lot of the other stuff, too, is just like, the non-superhero stuff that's a little more either in the horror world, because I'm a huge horror fan, or the just sort of like, this is so outlandish, I have to know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have to know what it is. Like, The Umbrella Academy.
Yeah,
like,
did you read Sandman?
I haven't read Sandman
yet. It's really, actually, I think that was actually the first comic I read.
I need to read it.
I was really into Neil Gaiman when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I gotta read Sandman, I'm goth too. So, logical sense to do it, and it was...
Yeah.
So good. So good. You would love it.
I need to read it. I think I'd really like it. So the next thing on my list that I mentioned earlier is, so I'm sort of grouping these things as the different mediums that I love. So that's comics now.
There are like no rules here. You can do whatever.
Great. I love it. I'll go to TV shows that
the one like, rule is there are no rules.
That are really impactful to me. And like I said, Gilmore Girls is actually really impactful.
I've never seen Gilmore Girls. Can you believe that?
I don't know. Like, you should watch it.
What is it about?
And if you hate it, I understand. Because I hate it too. Sort of.
Sure.
It's about the Gilmore Girls. It's literally about the two main characters.
I get that in Law and Order mix up.
What?
I don't know why.
Law and Order and Gilmore Girls?
I don't know why. Okay. I think it's because... the same people that like one, like the other.
I guess.
I don't know.
But it's about a mom and a daughter. And the mom had the daughter when she was 16. So they're close in age. So they're very, very... they have a friendship more than a mother-daughter thing.
Sure.
And sort of the whole... the pilot episode of this whole thing is the mom, when she got pregnant, didn't marry the guy who got her pregnant. And so she ran away from home and raised her daughter on her own. Away from her rich parents. Well, her daughter is super, super smart and got into this private school. And once, like, her daughter's like, I want to go to Harvard and blah, 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 and, like, all this stuff. And so in order to pay for that private school, the mom has to go talk to her mom, so the grandma, right, and say, I need help. I need money. And the grandma goes, okay. You can have it, you know, it's for your daughter. The only condition is every Friday night you have to come over for dinner. I want you guys back in our lives.
Oh.
And so it literally, the whole show basically is about those three girls, the Gilmore Girls, the daughter, the mom, and the grandma, and their relationship and their relationships with other people.
Mm.
And it's super, like, it came out in 99. It literally, the show opens with the Laws song, There She Goes. You know that song? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it opens. I mean, that it's like so like.
I love that you love this, Jimmy.
Oh my gosh. No, it's so good. And like,
what does your wife think?
She loves it. We watched it all together.
Did she get you into it, or was it just
no?
Kind of like,
I got her into it.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So I watched it with my mom growing up. And so,
I love that.
Like, me and my mom, I'd come home from school or whatever, and an episode would be on, we just like watch it.
Oh,
and I know,
that
right?
Is so wholesome.
And I know. And so I totally still love that show, and it's like it's one of those things that is inspiring and nostalgic
Yeah.
In the way that it is, like, it's always there, and if I'm ever, like, if I ever have a bad day, I can always, like, be like, I'm gonna go watch an episode of Gilmore Girls.
Aww.
Because it's, like, it's just immediately, it's just it just brings, yeah, it, like, yeah. makes you feel like home, right?
Yeah, that's how Parks and Rec is with me.
I've done the Parks and Rec thing, yeah, I love
Brooklyn
it.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
yeah.
too, recently, because Andrew yeah. Sandberg is perfect.
I do love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but Gilmore Girls was really good, and that's the show I got, like I said, I got Kaylee into. And then the other, my, so that's,
Kaylee is Jimmy's wife, by the way.
Yeah, Kaylee's my wife. Mm-hmm. I have two favorite TV shows, and it's Gilmore Girls, and then about the complete opposite of Gilmore Girls, it's Lost. Mm. Show Lost. And if you've, have you ever seen Lost?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so.
I know what it's about, loosely.
Anything you've heard about Lost is wrong.
Oh.
Probably. Like, just straight up. People Fair. Always like to talk about Lost. Oh, Lost, that's that show where blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's so much more than that, so much deeper than that. It's not a perfect show, but it's so, the fact that they could do like set, like, is it six? It's like six or seven seasons. I think it's six, maybe seven. Anyway, the fact they could do six or seven seasons and have it so cinematic and so like well done, it's just, it's incredible. I mean, it really is. It's like that one of those first TV shows that sort of changed into that instead of the, hey, it's like Cheers, or it's a sitcom, or like, they're, you know, besides like the miniseries, like it's the first long form TV show that really pushed that into the public eye and like in a big way. It's a show that if you were to watch it like live as it aired every week, if you missed an episode, you're going to be lost. Literally, exactly, right? Yeah. But because there's so much in every episode. And so Kaylee and I had never seen it. And we were like, let's watch it. We'd always talked about watching it. Never did. And it was like Valentine's Day 2 or 3 years ago. And we were like, we went to dinner. And like, we were like, let's just come home. Let's watch a movie, whatever. We didn't know what to watch. And so I was like, hey, we've always talked about like wanting to try Lost or whatever. Like, let's watch it. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, like, I'd mentioned it a couple times. She's like, yeah, let's do it. So we started it, and then it started our, like, basically year-long watch of Lost, and by the end is, like, hands down one of my favorite shows. It is, like, using the term work of art, literally a work of art. Like, it is so good.
Is it the plot line? Or you mentioned, graphics and scenery. And
I mean, it's everything. It's the way, it's character development. Mm. It's the whole plot, and the whole show is about the characters.
Okay.
So the plot itself, it kind of takes a back seat, and that's one of the big complaints that everybody has is, well, they never answer all these questions, and it's like, they do. They don't spoon feed you them though,
you right?
And that's the thing. And like, I won't give away the ending because the ending, people like to talk about the ending in one sentence. You can't explain the ending in one sentence. It's not possible, and there's so much nuance and like hidden meaning in everything, especially in that last season where you're like, oh my gosh, all this stuff. But man, it is a show that if you are like ever in the mood for that, like, I want to think about this TV show while I watch it, and it's not a kind of turn your mind off and go numb type of thing. It's really, really good. It's definitely one of my favorites.
Is it on Netflix?
Oh gosh, I think it went over to Hulu.
Okay, Hulu is so much better than Netflix. I'm sorry, Netflix, but it's been slacking a bit lately.
I go back and forth.
That's really fair.
I go back and forth, but I do love.
Do you get the student discount
on Hulu?
Mm-hmm.
I actually do the Hulu through Spotify.
Oh.
So okay. I do it when it's like. I think it's like $10 a month, and you get Spotify Premium and then Hulu with ads. So there's still ads, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's like watching TV.
Yeah, but it's also like, dude, it's like I get it for free basically. Like, so I'm not complaining, you know.
Yeah. I have a family plan, and they don't do it with a family plan, which sucks. Because I was like, oh, cool. No.
How much is the family plan?
15, and I think you can add 5 people.
That's like not bad.
5-ish, yeah.
Yeah. So the next TV show is sort of less of a TV
show.
Closes
your phone case.
I know. It's like, let's get real.
Mic drop.
It's more of an overarching thing.
Okay.
It's professional wrestling.
So I saw an Instagram story of you, Landon, and Stu watching wrestling.
Yeah.
And I just thought it's really funny.
Yeah. So I love professional wrestling.
Do you listen to the Mountain Goats?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
Do you know about the album?
Oh,
about
yeah. I love
wrestling?
Beat the Champ. It's awesome. I actually, I listened a little to some stuff from the Mountain Goats. And mm-hmm. then Derek Brown, who works here at ACM, mm-hmm. is a huge Mountain Goats fan.
Mm-hmm. He booked them at the lab.
Yes.
I was at that show.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, it was
There's
really
tears.
Cool. And he's been a big fan for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, I was asking him about his favorite records, and he's like, dude, just listen to Beat the Champ. It's
yes.
so good.
That's a Jimmy record.
It totally is. But I love wrestling, and this is where it's weird, because I don't know if I consider wrestling art.
Okay. I mean.
Because whatever, like, it's wrestling, and I ever, like, if anyone is going to.
Well, I mean, like, if sports is technically a form of art.
I guess, but I don't even know if I consider it a sport. I mean, it's very athletic. Yeah. I don't want to get beat up by any wrestlers by saying that, but like, I'll never.
Jimmy lives at 111.
Oh my gosh, no! I won't say it's fake because it's not fake. It's predetermined. It's not like I mean, hey man.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, some of that stuff is.
Explain
the predetermined thing.
Yes.
Oh, okay, so.
For me, mostly
okay,
for me.
Okay,
I
so
don't know
no, it's all good.
Wrestling. I play that wrestling game on like PlayStation.
Yeah. Okay.
That's as far as it goes for me.
I get it. Okay, so wrestling is. I'm not gonna get too deep because I talk for hours. Basically,
I want you and Landon to sit together and just do
oh
a
my gosh.
Wrestling.
We basically do that every time we talk. We're like, oh my god,
that
this and
true.
This and this.
That is kind of true.
Yeah.
Every time I walk in, I'm like,
it's
oh,
like,
they're
talking about wrestling.
Again.
Yeah. So, it is wrestling, is, largely in America run by the same company called the WWE. And the WWE has the same owner they've had since like 82, I think. His name is Vince
Jeez.
McMahon. WWE is a very problematic company. There's a lot of things that aren't good about it. We won't talk about those because that's a whole other thing.
They're a company.
Yeah. Basically, creatively though, every decision comes down to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he calls the shots, and it's super unique in that way. This is a billion-dollar company, and he's calling the shots.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so he, when you watch the WWE on TV,
mm-hmm.
and you have two people who wrestle,
mm-hmm.
they know already going out there who's going to win.
Okay.
Basically, what they do is they tell a story in the ring with the match.
That's so poetic.
No, I know, no. I know, it's really ridiculous. But they do, and they will know who's going to win, and then they want the entire audience to think that these two people are fighting,
mm-hmm.
when really what they're doing is they're working together
mm-hmm.
to,
mm-hmm.
like, do all these cool, like,
mm-hmm.
flips and tricks and, like, all that stuff, right? All the, like, this, they call them spots.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, and then when I do this, you're going to do this. And, so, and like,
oh,
if you really look carefully, sometimes you can see them leaning in and, like, whispering in their ear, or, like, all that stuff.
I just thought that was kind of gay.
To each other. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a little.
Hey, I kind of love you. Me too.
Yeah, exactly.
So do they plan out like the hits and like what they're
sometimes
gonna
yeah sometimes
oh.
they call it in the ring mm. they use a lot of hand signals and like if they like grab mm. someone's hand like they'll like squeeze it twice and that means this
that's
or whatever
gay.
Yeah
that's kind of gay Jimmy
oh it's not come on now but yeah so it totally it
I didn't know
it
that
totally is predetermined they know who's gonna win. Yeah but
so
I do
the
think
blood is real.
Blood is real, yeah.
Okay.
So they don't do it blood much anymore. Back in the day,
mm-hmm.
they used to do what they call blade jobs, where they would take razor blades and they'd cut their own forehead open for it to bleed. Yeah, disgusting, but like it looked cool.
For
whatever.
The art.
I guess, if you can call it that. But no, I just, that's something that recently, within the last year or so, has really become important in my life for the sole purpose of I can just turn my mind off and watch something stupid.
Which is important for Jimmy, who does a lot.
Yeah, like if I'm working a lot. And so like when I come home, and like Kaylee's into wrestling too, which is good. I got her into it. And I can sit there and watch that and it just be, I can just be at peace. I can just be like, okay, this is fine. And then it does also cause for like, you know, they do pay-per-views every month basically. And it calls for like fun in that way too, where it's like, oh, yeah, we'll have some people over, you know, make some guacamole and watch some wrestling or whatever.
We'll have Stu and Landon over.
Yeah. so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know.
So, is MMA the same thing?
No, MMA is
like,
real.
Oh,
no,
so it's not like
predetermined.
Oh.
No, they're actually killing each other. Yeah. Oof. Yeah, and so that's the difference, right? But the thing about wrestling, too, I love is that all the really bad storylines that they come up with of, why is this person mad at this person? And it's basically, the
it's
way
like
I
reality drama in a way.
The way I
like
describe it, the way I describe it is it's like a soap opera with superheroes. These guys and girls who can do larger than life, amazingly huge things. And they're mad at each other for the dumbest reasons. You know what I mean? Just something like that. So I do really love, I do love wrestling. All right.
Did you ever have like any of their gear? Like, you know how like some would have belts?
Yeah.
And some would have, like, masks?
No, I don't have. So we actually, me, Kaylee, Stuart and Emily, and Landon, we all started a, see, this is how deep I am. We started a WWE fantasy league.
Oh my gosh. I was about to ask.
You draft like superstars and what they call their wrestlers. And then you, like, every time they appear, you get a point. Every time they win a match, you get these points and all this stuff. And so we actually bought a – we went to Target, and we bought a, like, kid's replica belt.
Gosh.
And so we're going to do it basically, like, in however many, like, month increments, because there's no off-season. They go all year round. And then we're going to award the belt to the whoever wins. This is going to be the champion. It's so ridiculous.
I love it.
Yeah.
No, it's good. We need to do that more often with our friends. Like, just ridiculous stuff like that.
Totally. And it's just
ridiculous, I say in air quotes.
Yeah. It's just, it's so much fun.
So funny. Keep me updated on who wins.
I will. Absolutely.
Take a picture of the winner with just like holding
it
up.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Okay. How many was that? That was four. So I have six left. Okay. I just got to remember here. So those are all things that aren't necessarily connected to music.
They don't have to be.
But
I feel like as musicians, you have to get things that are not music to stay sane or not burn yourself out.
Totally. But I'm going to transition to music now.
I'm excited for this one.
So it's a little weird. I have three movies and I have three artists / records that musically mean a lot. And so I'll just start with the first one, which is Goodfellas, the movie. This is a movie that me and Alyssa Giacona, who works here at ACM, we always argue about movies and we can always agree upon Goodfellas being a perfect movie. But just the use of music in that movie is absolutely insane. It's so good. It is so good. And that's really, like, powerful and cool. And I love, I love when music is used effectively in a movie or a show. I mean, like, even going back to Lost, like, Kaylee walked down the aisle to a song from Lost.
Aww.
And so that was, like, a really cool thing, like, one of the score pieces. But I also love when movies use pre-existing music, like, you know, like the Pixies in Fight Club or something, or even there's a show on Netflix called Mindhunter, and it uses Led Zeppelin's In the Light in one of the episodes. It's just like, oh, it's so amazing. But mm-hmm. yeah, so Goodfellas has this, and it's sort of like famous thing. It's this whole scene with the song Layla by Derek and the Dominoes or Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, I remember the first time I watched that movie, I was in love with the movie, mm-hmm. and that scene comes up, and it's just like, man, such a good, effective way to use music in a movie.
I feel like Tarantino has a really good grasp on doing that, and Lynch as well.
Totally.
And the Stranger Things people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I am a big Tarantino fan who has a lot of problems with Tarantino.
I think most Tarantino
fans, yeah.
I've definitely talked about Tarantino on this before, and I'm like, well.
Yeah, well, there's a problem there. But no, but I mean, and like another person, this will segue into the next thing is another person who I think just knocks it out of the water every single time is Stanley Kubrick.
And I don't know who that is.
He's a director. Excuse me. Who directed several really important movies. He directed 2001, Space Odyssey.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He directed Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, okay.
And then he directed The Shining, yeah. which is yeah. my favorite horror movie. Maybe my favorite movie. And definitely one of my favorite scores. Mm-hmm. And that score was done by Wendy Carlos.
I love Wendy Carlos.
Wendy Carlos is amazing. She's yeah. like unreal. She did Clockwork yes. Orange too.
Yeah, yeah, I knew she did that.
Yeah, so there's a whole it's like 8 minutes of her talking about her scoring Clockwork Orange and The Shining, and it's like it's amazing.
She's
so good.
Not from this earth.
No, she's just like, oh, I don't know. I just like created these things.
You know,
things.
I just kind of played around and whatever yeah. sounded. I'm like, what?
Totally, yeah. It's like, what? But I totally, there's the opening scene of The Shining as this helicopter shot over mm-hmm. this lake.
Yeah, I had to score that for class.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I remember doing that. Or not doing that, but I remember seeing someone I knew do that and be like, it's not right without the original music. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. But like that whole helicopter shot and the use of music there is absolutely incredible in the original. I mean, mm-hmm. that movie is...
I don't know. My score was pretty good. No,
oh,
it's not.
I
it was
bet
actually
it was,
not.
it was really that, not. That movie is a masterpiece.
I haven't seen that in a while.
It is...
I think I watched it the first time when I was like... I think I was 15 and I was yeah. like... I'm not sure I'm ready for this.
Yeah, I mean,
so I rewatched it when I was 17. Too.
And
yeah.
I think for me, like I said, I'm a huge horror movie fan, mm-hmm. and I think for me, like the horror movies I like the most are the ones that aren't quote unquote as scary, right?
Yeah.
But The Shining is one of those movies that sticks with you. Mm-hmm. It's not sort of the jump scare scary, which those yeah. are scary because you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect that. Oh no, you know. Mm. But
I think The Shining builds pretty well.
The Shining builds amazingly, and by the end, I mean, you know, when he jumps out of that pillar from mm-hmm. behind that pillar, mm-hmm. like, I mean, that is like mm-hmm. absolute terror, mm-hmm. and him chasing Danny through the hallways and all, like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, so good. But I do
chest anxiety. Just
I know.
Right? I'm like,
I do think like that. A lot of that was so intentional by Kubrick and in the way that he wanted to build that movie and
yeah,
create
definitely.
Terror. It's very, it's almost like Hitchcockian, you know, mm-hmm. where he loved building that. And it wasn't the shock and awe of it. It was the no, this is like actually terrifying in real life, right? You know, and that's the thing that I really. Those are my favorite horror movies. Besides that, the ones that you just get together with your friends and watch because they're schlocky and bad are the ones that are actually scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because you lay down at night to go to sleep and you're like, oh, wow, if that actually happened, that'd be crazy. on another note, another one of my favorite movies is Punch Drunk Love. Have you ever seen that?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so this relates to... music and movies, and I think it's my favorite score of all time. It's by a guy named John Bryan. Paul Thomas Anderson directed the movie, and he did a lot of music for him in like his earlier years. And the use of sound and music in this movie is meant to put you, like, it's not a horror movie by any means, but it's meant to put you on edge, right?
That's cool.
Where it's this, you're basically watching this guy who's down on his luck, and like, I mean, his like anxiety's through the roof, and he's like losing his mind because he's so
college.
I get it, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he's so high strung, and he like meets this girl that he really likes.
Uh oh.
I know. And so a lot of the music in that movie is like this really, really intense, like percussive kind of like driving thing, and then sort of the thing that. Kind of, in a way, it symbolizes him, and then the thing that symbolizes her and what she does in his life is he finds the opening scene. He finds this little pump piano, and it makes this beautiful sound. And every once in a while, he like gets stressed out, and he'll go in his office, and he'll like press a note, and it'll make the sound. And so that is incorporated into the the score, and in a way that like it's just this really cool dichotomy of these two different things. And I really, really, really love it. It's very powerful. It also has a song from another movie that is not a good movie that I love called Popeye, based on Popeye the Sailor, with Robin Williams and Shelley Duvall. Same year as The Shining. She was in The Shining and Popeye.
Busy year.
I know, right? And it has a song called He Needs Me that she sings, and that song is in Punch Drunk Love. And
who sings that song originally?
Shelley Duvall. And then all the music in Popeye was written by Harry Nilsson. And then Shelley Duvall sang it. And then for the movie. And then, yeah, basically they reuse it in Punch Drunk Love. And so Punch Drunk Love is a movie that there's not very many movies that I watch. And I immediately go, I want to watch that again right now. And it's one of them. So I highly recommend it. It's super. Anyone who's interested in like film score, that kind of stuff, I am all over that. So those are the movies that have really been impactful musically to me. And now I'll kind of do what you were saying at the beginning of the episode, where it was like stuff I've been into recently.
You went backwards, Jimmy.
I know. There's two artists that I've been really, really into in the past year or so that have really shaped my view on music. And inspired what, not necessarily the music I make, being a drummer and kind of, I play other people's music.
Yeah.
But the music that I gravitate to. And it's piano-driven singer-songwriter, which I don't play with any piano-driven singer-songwriters. Not really. And so that's sort of the weird thing. But I've been really, really into Tom Waits and Randy Newman.
I'm so glad.
I know. So I'll start with Randy Newman because he's the first one. I have Tom Waits. We'll talk Waits. Don't worry. But Randy Newman is someone who I think a lot of people our age consider him the Toy Story guy because he wrote You Got a Friend in Me, which is a great song. But, oh my gosh, he has so many other great songs also that aren't children friendly. So many that aren't kid friendly. And one song that I really, really, really love is, it's called Guilty. It's off the album, it's off Good Old Boy, I think. I'm pretty sure it's off Good Old Boy, or Good Old Boys. And it is a song written from the perspective of a man to a woman, and him saying, like, basically, like, yeah, I'm guilty of everything. Like, I did it all. And there's a line where, you know, he's basically talking about how he doesn't like himself and he's guilty. And, yeah, I'm, you know, kind of a downbeat. But the last line of the song, real subdued song, the last line is it takes a whole lot of medicine for me to pretend that I'm somebody else. And it's like, man, that is so powerful and so cool. And such a neat outlook on that relationship, especially in the 70s, I think, because, and the thing I like about Waits and Newman so much, and a lot of those guys, is that that macho-ness was there, but it wasn't that, like, 80s, like, you know, like, it wasn't Motley Crue, right?
I view it as masculine, not macho, because I feel like macho gives kind of, like, a, I don't know, like, a weird undertone with it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, like, a guy singing about his experiences as a guy who keeps fucking up.
Yeah, totally. Is, you know, totally. And, like, that song Guilty is, and there's a hi-hat fill in that song. It's, like, real, Jim Keltner played drums on all of the, Randy Newman stuff, and Jim Keltner's, like, a freaking genius session player, and there's this little hi-hat fill he does. Super simple, super thin, but it's so, it's one of those that's just, like, oh, it's perfect.
You don't hear that often.
Yeah.
Hi-hat fill.
Exactly, and, so, and I love Randy Newman recently, within the last few years, compiled a, there's a three CD set. It's called the Randy Newman Songbook, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. I don't know if you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And basically it's just him re-recording all these songs from his career, just him and a piano singing, like he does them live. And oh, it's so good. But we can move on now to Tom Waits, who
Wait, before that.
Yeah, no, go
Were you
for
there
it.
At the Gary Newman Masterclass? I think you were.
Yeah, yeah.
Campbell posted on his Snap story. He was it was like a picture of Gary Newman sitting. He's like, I love Randy Newman.
I love it. Yeah. Everybody was like, isn't that Toy Story guy? And I was like, no, it's not. It's Gary Newman.
You different.
You should know who Gary Newman is. He's really cool.
Yes, he's my synth dad.
Did you go to that show?
Yeah, of course.
So good.
Like when I do my episode, I've already started compiling my list. Gary Newman's on that list.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a reason I bought a synth.
Exactly, he's the best.
He's a synth god.
Exactly. But yeah, so Tom Waits. I
love Tom Waits.
Love Tom Waits.
I went backwards in like time wise because I found Nick Cave before I found Bob Dylan and before I found Tom Waits and before I found like all of those like sad, grumpy, men singing. But like when I found Tom Waits, I was like, yes. And Leonard Cohen, of course. But.
Yes, of course. I love Leonard Cohen. I love everyone you just mentioned.
I cried so hard when he passed. I was like, I was not ready.
At a gig, and that was the year that everybody died that I loved.
Yeah, I was Bowie, Prince, and Cohen.
Was huge.
Those were like,
Yeah, and so I was at a gig, and I remember looking at my friend John, and I was just like, dude, Leonard Cohen died. And he just looked at me and he goes, are you freaking serious? I was like, yeah. He goes, oh, my gosh. It was just so, it was so bad.
It's hard.
But the thing about Tom Waits that I love is the thing that I think a lot of people don't necessarily, if they're, I don't know if you can be a casual Tom Waits fan, but like a lot of people like are like, oh, Rain Dogs. Rain Dogs where it's at. It's like, I'm not really interested in even Rain Dogs. I'm interested in the early stuff.
Yeah.
Where he's still like, crooning and like singing these songs, like the first 4 to 5 albums are nearly perfect in my opinion.
Powerful.
Yeah, I mean, like I started with Small Change, which is probably my favorite Tom Waits album. It has my favorite Tom Waits song called Invitation to the Blues.
Oh yeah,
so good. That's and like song. People hate his voice. Ugh. I love it. Kaylee hates Randy Newman and Tom Waits.
So does Alyssa.
Oh, I know. And it's like, whatever.
I was going to fight Alyssa. I was like, Alyssa, no, you're wrong.
I know. But I...
That was a large appeal for me to those types of people was their singing voice because it wasn't singing.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like, it was, but it, like, you know, it wasn't Madonna. It wasn't Beyonce singing or anything. It was just, like, sad people writing songs.
Totally.
And just being like, hey, I'm sad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, me too.
Yeah, totally.
I relate. I can't sing either.
What I love so much about Small Change is the vast, like, he has these huge piano bout, like the first song, Tom Travis Blues, the Waltzing Matilda song, you know, is like this huge sweeping song. Mm-hmm. And then the next song is Step Right Up, which is just like kind of, you know, jazz kind of thing, you know, right, with the, like walking bass line. So he's got all these things, but even the title track is, it's literally just him and a saxophone player, and it's him just reciting this poem he wrote about this like pimp who gets killed, and it's like, man, that's so like
out there.
I remember showing my friend that, and he was like, dude, this is just art. He's like, it's not even music, it's just art. And I was like, totally, it is.
Yeah.
Even going back to his first.
That's how I feel about the Velvet Underground. They have a song. What is it? I think it's Lady Godiva.
Yeah.
Where he's just reciting like a story with music, and like one ear's panned hard left, and that's just the music, and then the other one's just him speaking, and I'm like,
yeah,
fucking art, guys.
Yeah, it's great. I really, really love the first album too. Closing Time. It's before he was really using his gruff voice. It's back when he was just singing regularly, and it's so like raw and real, and so much of that stuff is too. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think that's like now that I'm older, I understand why I gravitated towards it.
Yeah, I mean, and like even I think it's on, I think it's Foreign Affairs. Might be there's a song called "Letter from a Hooker," or oh, is it "Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis"? And it's a whole song that's literally just this hooker writing a letter to this guy, which there's a great performance on YouTube of him. He bookends that song with Silent Night. So he does Silent Night, he sings it, and then he ends it with Silent Night. And the end of the song is just basically like she writes spoilers to the song, I guess. She writes this song to him, or she writes this letter to him. And she ends it with, like, hey, everything I just told you is a lie. I'm actually in prison. I need money. And it's, like, this really, like, it's, he does it way better than that.
Yeah.
Because he's Tom Waits. But it's just so, it's so powerful. And then to end that with Silent Night is, like, oh, my gosh. So good.
But, yeah. So Tom Waits.
I know. Tom Waits is, like, it makes me sad that Kaylee doesn't like Tom Waits. Just
it makes me sad that most people don't like Tom Waits.
I know. I just don't get it, man.
Although, I prefer Lou Reed, but. I think that's just
I love Lou Reed. I really love Lou Reed.
I love
any of those guys. Like
love Lou Reed.
I mean, Sally Can't Dance is really good. Really good.
I can't listen to what's that album? How am I forgetting? Transformer. I can't listen to Transformer without crying out of joy and both sadness.
Yeah, it's really great. Do you like Berlin?
Yes.
I don't know why. There's like this weird thing about Berlin that people don't like.
That's the experimental. No.
It's a. I think it's the one right after Transform. I don't know.
No,
now
I
I'm
do
just
like
making
Berlin.
Stuff up.
I can't wait. Let me look. Let me Google this.
But I'm. Like, no, I do love Berlin.
He's got like an experimental album. It's not Lulu. It's not that one.
You a big Lulu fan?
You
are the table? That what you're saying?
Yes. I'm the fucking table, and I relate to that very much. I appreciate the idea behind it, and it could have gone well.
Yeah.
But you know, we got Lulu. I love Lou Reed, and we'll stand behind him.
I don't know if I've ever listened to all of that.
It's not. No.
It's rough.
Let's see. No, Metal Machine, sorry.
Metal Machine.
Everyone hates Metal Machine.
Everybody hates. I don't know if I've listened to that one.
It's weird. It's like.
I'll listen to, I like weird music.
It's like the type of weird that's like. It's not Lou Reed. Lou Reed was experimenting there.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
I've ruined my ear to music now, which is always good.
I fucking love Berlin.
Berlin's awesome.
People don't like Berlin?
That's what I've heard. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
They're wrong. This has Men of Good Fortune. That's like one of his best songs. Sad song's good too.
Yeah, I mean. I just think
VU has a song called Stephanie Says, and it's really sad. It's actually a really sad song, but I love it.
How many songs do they have that was a girl's name and then the word says?
Well, they have like
it was Jane Says, it was Stephanie Says, it was
Candy Says have like two or three different releases.
Yeah,
and then Stephanie Says was like precursor to Candy Says, which like it was the same thing. I think they just kind of changed some stuff around. I don't know.
Man.
I love it though, and then. Wand, I need to link you to their new album. Their last song on their album is called Jennifer's Gone, and it's so Lou Reed. It is so Lou Reed. I had to double check that I wasn't shuffling something on Spotify because I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then I started crying because it was so good.
I love that stuff. I just think that I think what comes down to me and why I like those people so much and why their art is so impactful to me is that it always comes down to the song to me. I love albums as whole constructs. But to be honest, it's hard to like find time to sit and listen to a full record from start to finish without any interruptions, yeah, just at definitely. This point in my life. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to do that. Like, in high school, I used to just, like, I collected records, and I would just sit there and listen to a whole record, and it was awesome. And I still am able to do that occasionally, but it's mm-hmm. usually, like, I'm doing this while doing something else, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so much of it now is, like, I just want to hear a good song, mm-hmm. you know? I just want to hear a good song that I like. And I think that's really why in the past year and a half or so, I've gravitated towards those songwriters, because they do have those bite-sized mm-hmm. 3 to 4 to 5 minute songs mm-hmm. that are so powerful mm-hmm. and so impactful. And that's honestly one of the things that has really transferred over to my playing music too, is it's like, I've always tried to be like this, but this has helped even more. It's like, man, I just want to do what's best for the song. Mm-hmm. I don't, like, I'm not the guy who's like, look how flashy I, like, I'm not yeah. a good drummer. Like, I'll just straight up, like, I'm not. And so whatever I can do to just help play the drums to whatever mm-hmm. song, whatever the song calls for, you know what I mean? And so that's the thing where I really, I think why I gravitate towards those.
Yeah.
But I'll end, my last thing, I'll end is my, I'll go ahead and say, it's not always my favorite album, but it's like my favorite album of all time, if that makes sense. Yes. It's not always the album I'm listening to currently mm-hmm. and being like, I'm obsessed with this, but it's the one I always go back to. It's the first album I fell in love with. It's the first band I fell in love mm-hmm. with. It's the White Album by the Beatles. It's perfect. Revolution 9 and all. I'm in. Yeah. I'm in.
I think Campbell and I talked about this on their episode.
Great.
I think Jamie too, but I think his was Abbey Road, if I remember Abbey correctly. Road.
I mean, listen, but I don't think the Beatles did anything bad ever. But what? Tell me.
Not like musically, but like,
well,
I don't know. You know.
Of
I'm not
course.
The biggest Beatles fan.
It's okay to be
you
wrong.
Listen,
you want to hear there's a really funny story of I was at, this is before Kaylee and I were married, and I was at her parents' house, and her brother was there with mm-hmm. his girlfriend at the mm-hmm. time. They're no longer together. And she was like, I'm a huge music fan. I was like, oh my God, who do you like? And we were talking. She's like, my favorite band is Vampire Weekend. Okay. I don't have any issue with Vampire Weekend. Okay. I just don't really care for their music.
I don't like Vampire Weekend either.
It's not my thing. It's fine. It's totally fine. It's not offensive, you know. It's not musically offensive or anything.
Wait, what does this have to do with the Beatles?
Hold on.
Oh, okay.
She asked me my favorite band. I said the Beatles. And she goes, Beatles are so overrated. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. Literally, it turned into a screaming match by the end of this, where me and her were like yelling at each other.
Wow.
And she was like, Vampire Weekend's so much more impactful than the Beatles. And I was like, what? I was like, dude, Vampire Weekend wouldn't exist without the Beatles. Like, straight up. Like, and so I understand, like, not being, like, the world's biggest fan of the Beatles. Mm. But for me, they are, like, all of those guys in the 60s talk about how Elvis Presley was so important to them. The Beatles are my Elvis, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I gotcha.
Like, they are the band that I think did musically, no mm-hmm. wrong. I like most of the solo stuff that has come out.
I prefer their solo stuff over the Beatles, which is weird.
I don't agree with you, but I understand. You know what I mean? Like, it's one
of
those things.
Well, I guess Paul's stuff is probably like where I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love it all, man. I'm a huge fan. And unfortunately, when Paul McCartney played Oklahoma City, I was out of town.
Mm.
I was playing out of town. I couldn't make it to the show.
Musician life, you miss a gig you want to see because you're playing a gig. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
It was very sad. Mm. And so, honestly, like, the White Album is that thing that, like, kind of the first thing I remember hearing musically when I was a little kid was Blackbird off mm-hmm. the White Album. And it's one of those that has stayed with me through my whole life. And probably inspired me the most due to the pure fact that mm-hmm. I wouldn't be doing music if it wasn't for that album, you mm-hmm. know? And so that's my thing. I have my mom had an original, I don't know how she got this. She's not German. She had an original German pressing on white vinyl.
Did she date a German maybe?
I don't
know. Befriend a German?
Maybe. But she had an original German pressing of the White Album mm-hmm. on white vinyl. And she gave it to me whenever I started collecting records. I still have it. And it's...
If you ever need to sell magical. It, you make some good cash on that.
Hopefully, I would be able to make some good money. I don't think I'll ever get rid of it. If I sell all my records, I'd probably keep that one. But those are my 10. I know I talked a lot about them, but...
No, that's good. That's what this podcast is for.
Those are my 10 works of art, sort of.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, like,
wrestling's
aren't
art, but whatever. It works.
Something that means a lot to you. I guess it means a lot, yeah.
and it does inspire me in several ways.
Yes. It inspires him because he's always threatened to brawl everyone that walks into the third floor.
No way.
And then he picks up Scott and just, like, body slams him.
No. That'd be terrifying. He'd probably kill me.
Probably. Yeah. My favorite memory of, like, interaction with Scott is I was in his office... Something we talked about Brian Eno. I don't even know how. And he's like, oh yeah, I grab tea and like biscuits with him when I'm in England. I just looked at him and I was like, what?
Yeah.
You grab tea with Brian Eno?
Yeah, man.
He's like, yeah, I'm very humble that he like likes me that much. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, no, he like he'll talk and he'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm going to London and I hit up Eno, so we'll see if he wants to hang out. I'm like, what the crap, man? What? Like, so cool. But it is like how cool is it that.
Very.
Like, he is doing that and also is meeting with students at a school, right? That, you
know.
So
humble.
And that's the thing. That's really the thing that is really, really cool about the school is sort of that, like, people are out doing cool things and they come back and they're, like, just as excited about what's happening here, even though it's not Brian Eno. You know what I mean? Like,
we can't all be Brian Eno, unfortunately.
There can only be one.
Jimmy, you want to give us your handles?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. Let me look.
I think your Instagram is Sweet Jimmy
Barbecue. My
Instagram is
Sweet Jimmy Barbecue. It's, let me show that's.
And then you're in.
Sweet Jimmy BBQ. Yeah. And then my Twitter.
You have a Twitter?
Yeah. I'm Jimmy Jackson on Facebook. Twitter. I have a Twitter. I never tweet. Very rarely. Let me see. How do you check? I should have been prepared. at Sweet Jimmy BBQ on Twitter as well.
Cool. And you are in Dr. Pants?
I'm in Dr. Pants. I'm in The Lunar Laugh. And I am in, not in, but I play with Grant Adams.
And those links will be in the description box. So you can follow Jimmy and all of his awesome stuff that he works on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Jimmy.
Cool. Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
Yeah. All right. See you guys.
Bye.